Okay. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello. Okay, so I'm Anushka Bailey, and I'm an MA by research student here.
Yeah, at University of Warwick.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. All right, Anushka, I'm just going to ask you a few questions about your representing the other workshop, mm-hmm. Verbatim Theatre workshop. And first of all, I'd just like you to define verbatim theatre.
Yes.
I know that's difficult, and the whole point is that you're supposed to be working this out over time, but what is verbatim theatre for you, or how do you conceive it?
Well, I think, sort of traditionally speaking, verbatim theatre is where you use interviews or transcripts or even sometimes diaries of the people in question and then you sort of transpose that into some kind of performance using the transcript, the diary, the exact words of the subject.
Yeah.
I've created my own verbatim theatre pieces in the past. The last one I did, I actually performed here before I was a student, which was based on six prostitutes who I interviewed at the English Collective of Prostitutes in Camden in London. And I used their testimonials as part of a wider text. And I think that's what standard verbatim theatre, or the idea of verbatim theatre, is concerned with, using that kind of model.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And was there anything different about this approach? I mean, considering you were using students and, in a sense, they were verbatim off each other, or, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, what was the material?
Sure. Well, we began with this sort of idea of, you know, what is verbatim? Mm. And most people came in and sort of said, well, we don't really know, which was a nice place to start. Mm-hmm. And we sort of looked at the verbatim model, at the idea of how far can the exact, quote-unquote, text, the exact words, the transcript, if you like, how far can that actually represent the subject, the person, the situation?
Yeah.
How far is it actually doing its job in terms of representation? And I thought it was quite an interesting question to explore. I suppose I came up with the idea of the question from my own work in verbatim theatre and also my own work as a performance artist. And personally, I had a conflict there, because I found that as a performance artist, my experience of that in Q&As and in feedback was that I was getting through more in terms of being able to represent more through a sort of abstract expressionist aesthetic, rather than when just working solely with text. And I wondered, how far can these two operate together to create something very interesting?
Yeah. Okay. And that was part of the idea, the intimacy of this group and developing together.
Exactly. And so we took this idea of dual heritage for several reasons. First of all, I'm kind of interested in the dual heritage experiences. It sort of sets up immediately, to my mind, a neither nor kind of situation, where in terms of identity, you know, it's very hard to kind of pin yourself in one or the other, because you are both and at the same time neither. So it's quite an interesting situation to be in, and it also sort of mirrors this idea of, you know, can we use practice and academic research?
Yeah.
You know, can we use verbatim text and a sort of more abstract performance art version of things? So these sort of binaries, sort of trying to work out what happens when we put these paradoxes, these binaries together. Mm-hmm. And,
And how did you find the students responded to it?
Very, very well. I mean, I took some feedback, which I think you've got.
Yep.
Yeah. I know you took your own feedback as well.
Yep.
I thought they responded very well. The first session was incredibly emotional. I think being dual heritage myself, I think the subject, the experience of being dual heritage, of dual heritage origin, at least in Britain, is something that's quite undermined. It's an experience that doesn't get a certain amount of attention, let's say. And the experience that we had, at least in the first session, was of relief And this is from the student's own sort of reports, relief, a lot of anger, and I don't know, kind of a slight explosion. Yeah. You know, sort of there's, we only managed to get through a few points that I'd, let's say, initially thought of, well, we'll get through 6 to 8 sort of teaching points or discussion points or whatever. We got through 2 because the level in the room was just so high.
And each point was punctuated by problems and, you know, problematizing.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
Was this, would you have seen this as part of your research, I wonder?
Yes, definitely. The work that I'm doing at the minute is on, I do use a lot of concept of foreignness, exile and estrangement mm-hmm. in my own research work at the moment. But it's also, I was interested to do it and was, you know, really excited when the OSL accepted it, because first of all, the dual heritage thing, I think, is something that needs to be explored more, or could, there's a lot of mileage in it to explore it in an academic construct, sort of situation, if you like, context. The other thing is that I think it opens up a lot of this idea of, like, theory and practice, if you like. It is in itself, and this was a concept we discussed throughout the sessions, it is a kind of dual heritage in itself. And I was quite interested to explore the idea of practice as research through the model afforded by the binary of dual heritage, the neither nor state. So I thought it could be quite an interesting way for me within my own pedagogical research, to do that.
Is there, I mean, you mentioned open space learning, and obviously that's my interest, so that's the angle I'm coming at it from. How do you understand open space learning?
I understand it at the moment as focusing on participation, focusing, or at least affording the opportunity for students of all levels, BA to PhD, to start engaging in their own, I don't know, knowledge making, if you like. And I think that's quite exciting, because my own experience from when I was doing my BA 10 years ago was I found that kind of sit there and listen to what the teacher's telling you, absorb, reproduce, wait for your mark. I found that wasn't enough. It's not that, I don't think this is right, but I just thought it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, we used to set up our own discussion groups and our own stuff when we were doing that. And when I came here and saw what the OSL was doing, I thought, finally, it's actually taking on an institutional aspect, if you like, where, you know, you get given spaces and you don't have to go and sit in someone's hallway.
Sure, yeah. Okay. And is there any, I mean, part of what we're trying to do is the Open Space Learning Project finishes in July. The funding runs out. How do you think events like Representing the Other can be supported institutionally? Do you think there is space institutionally for this to happen in the future? How do you think we can justify it, you know, within this institutional framework? You know, what do you think? Once the Open Space Project, the Open Space Learning Project finishes, how do you think projects like yours are going to be instituted or institutionally accepted?
You mean,
what kind of argument would you make?
You mean, where's the money coming from?
Well, where's the money coming from? Where's the space coming from? Yeah, who's going to facilitate it?
Well, I'd love the answer. I'd love to know the answer to that. I think the focus, I mean, whether it ends up being department by department, and, you know, two or more departments collaborating together or putting together resources to create, you know, courses like you're saying, this identity course. So it's sort of multidisciplinary and therefore can sort of attract a pot, if you like. I think that's one way. I think it's really, I think that the idea of practice as research has got to start to gain a bit more sway. I think it's highly undervalued, and At the moment, I think before it gathers momentum and sort of proves itself, which is a horrible thing to say, it's going to be really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As I say, I'm of the kind of do-it-yourself background,
sure.
So I think there's always a space.
There's always a way. Yeah.
But what is different about OSL here is that when everything's taken care of for you, when you say, oh, I can go and use this studio, or there's a small amount of budget, you know, tiny amount of budget to do this with, to invite, let's say, a speaker from Iran who would never get exposure, or at least not on this side of the water. That kind of support is allows you really to focus on the quality of the work,
yeah.
And the level of research that comes out of that. So when something like that, if you're saying this is going to disappear, I think that's quite that's going to be quite a blow, because it'll take us all back into our hallways. Yeah. And
I'm not saying it's going to disappear, but I suppose what I'm suggesting is it's a challenge to justify it, because the point is that you have to continually justify these projects to somebody who's going to help fund it and help institute it. And I wonder, first of all, do you think there's an advantage in instituting it? Because you talked about doing it yourself. But I wonder, there is an advantage, isn't there, as well, in terms of the breadth of appeal that it would have if it's offered by the university and saying, actually, look, all these people have access to it, so they don't need to be going out on a limb. It's actually, in a way, they're being welcomed in to it, I wonder.
Well, I know certainly with the Representing Otherness course that a lot of the students, because it was so evenly split, sort of 50-50 between BA and postgrads of different levels, a lot of students had the opportunity to interact with each other, not just you know, in the classroom, but intellectually interact with each other, and they wouldn't have had that opportunity, I imagine, because usually BAs spend time with the BAs and do courses that are BA approved and, you know, MA and so on. And this course seemed to attract, as I say, 50-50. So they're benefiting a lot from each other in that way. I don't think you'd have that necessarily without that sort of space. From the feedback that I took myself, I haven't finished finalising the numbers, but it's something like 80% said that the teaching was as good as, if not better than, other experiences of teaching that they've had in Warwick currently, and that's from BA to PhD level, and something like 90% said the course content was outstanding. So clearly, and this is, as I say, from BA to PhD, from, I think we had something like 12 different, no, I can't remember how, we had several different departments, students from different departments, coming along to that. Again, I don't think that they would have even reached, the news wouldn't have reached that many students. So in terms of Representing Otherness, I think that it certainly wouldn't have happened on this scale with this much student satisfaction if it had been of the DIY variety.
Sure. Yeah. Do you think it could be instituted, though, as an assessed course? Do you think it could be instituted within an academic department?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because as I say, it's just a different way of approaching, you know, deconstructionist philosophy, basically. It's just a different way of doing it, of taking a text and seeing how it dissolves and decomposes, and then what you can do with it, how you can build it back up. So in terms of satisfying a sort of academic criteria, then yes, absolutely, as we see from BA to PhD saying so. But you've got the added benefit with OSL projects, and with this one in particular, where the students are actually doing it. So this level of participation that they can get involved with, it's more empowering as a way of learning. I mean, as a lecturer myself over in Birmingham, it's much more empowering to get people on their feet and creating their own knowledge and engaging creatively with the material, rather than just sitting there and sort of accepting passivity, which I don't think helps when you leave the institution.
So it's important not to see it as a break from the academic in that sense. It's to see it as something which is completely incorporated within.
As part of essential building
project,
blocks. I think, at least, of an academic experience.
So is there anything, how would you assess it? If you were to assess it, how would you assess it?
Well, it depends. I mean, this particular course, I think, first of all, was too short. So if one were to assess it, its final point at this point in time, yeah. its ending session, I think it would be premature. The students would need at least another, however many sessions, yeah, at least 5, 6, 7 sessions more, I would say, in order for them to create something that could be assessed. I think you'd assess, personally, I would be interested in assessing how much they allowed themselves to engage creatively with the material. That doesn't necessarily mean on their feet. That can be away, you know, with short bits of documentation, not necessarily formal essays, but some kind of reflexivity on the page. And I'm particularly curious to see how they would build the sort of spirit of risk. And that, I think, you can assess. That's the sort of practice element, that the watching someone take more and more risks with the material, with themselves, with the way they approach things, and you can see that in the room as it develops. A lot of these students here, who, particularly the PhD students, strangely enough, who had never performed or never done anything in public, maybe a bit of public speaking, were running around doing all sorts of things. And I think there was a definite process in that. Yeah. That you could mark. You could, I don't mean mark as in grade, I mean that you could analyse,
yeah,
that process. You could see how it was developing. And that level of engagement, I think, would be what you'd assess on a practical level. And as I say, on a theoretical level, it would be some form of reflexive writing. And then you'd have a final piece at the end, and seeing how the theory that was created, how the knowledge created in the room, not just harking back to whatever someone's read, but how they've created and taken on what's been created in the room, how far they've used that and implemented that, both within their writing and within their own performance. That would be something that, because in a sense then you're also to some degree assessing the level of listening in the creation and in the creation of the knowledge.
Yeah.
How far are they actually participating,
yeah,
in that? And I think that would be much easier to see if they were given more time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, if I understand you, you're, yeah, suggesting that assessment could actually aid the process.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, I mean, I observed the final performances, and I noticed that quite a few of them were very autobiographical, yes, and inward-looking. And I was quite surprised by that because of what I understood of verbatim theatre and what, yeah, you know, and how I thought it constructs identity sort of almost by collage, you know. And I wondered, well, why this turn inward?
Yeah.
We talked about that at the time, and, yeah, you mentioned time. If this were another 5 weeks, perhaps we'd build up more and more and more. But I wonder also if there was a kind of reflective assessment.
Mm-hmm.
That would help almost, yeah, impersonalize, it might not be quite the right word, but that sense of,
yeah,
double perspective. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
That something doesn't seem to, because the criticism would be that some of this is too almost therapeutic, mm-hmm, rather, mm-hmm, than academic.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that sense of intellectual content,
yeah,
versus, you know,
that's interesting,
self-help.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's very easy to... It's very easy to confuse the two. And I don't mean that, sorry, I sort of... But the reason I say that is because if you are... First of all, I hate to use this phrase, but it's a bit of a hot topic.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And given the fact that you've got a lot of people in the room who have come from this dual heritage background,
yeah,
and who haven't had an opportunity to discuss it in a formalized way...
Yeah.
And verbatim theatre itself being a very much an issues-based form, sure, of course, there is going to be a level of emotionality,
absolutely,
and of an emotional discourse and engagement,
yeah,
with the topic. Now, I personally think that it's a bit of a misnomer to say that one cannot accrue academic research.
Mm.
Or one should not accrue, or academic research is somehow dispassionate, or lacking in that. So although I could see why You could say, oh, well, you know, it's a bit of a group therapy. And of course, there's a lot of elements of that because it is such a hot topic and it is so personal. And when people are encouraged to get up and physicalize, a lot can come out. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things about using the theatre model. Mm. You invoke that already.
Yeah, but the advantage of the theatre model would seem to be that it you represent yourself rather than just express yourself. In the sense that you are impersonalizing your own emotions, that it's an aesthetic relation.
Yes.
And I'm wondering whether the assessment criterion would actually help bring that part of it out.
It's very interesting because, it's a really interesting question. My theatre background is from creative theatre, let's say creating theatre background. It's a Lecoq background and a Woolley Hart background, which is very contrary to a lot of theatrical models that are particularly popular now in Britain, let's say. Now, the thing with creating theatre is that, and I'm just talking about the Lecoq pedagogy, if you like, and what you go through with that, is that you draw a lot, you observe your environment, but you engage with your environment. And in engaging with your environment, you bring a level of self-reflexivity to that. And that's part of the process of creating theatre. How can we express neutrality? Well, it's impossible. So all of your own self emerges, no matter how small, in the twitch of a finger, for example. And then eventually in the Lecoq pedagogy, this goes on into the clown work, which is a sort of celebration of difference and otherness and all the rest of it within the self. What happened with our course was it was so... the students brought such a level of need, if you like, and emotionality to it. And we did have two sessions which were particularly dedicated towards being more self-reflexive, of analysing one's own experience in order to relate to or bring a sense of self-awareness in order to relate to the other in a way of finding what is otherness. So first we explore the otherness that we find within ourselves, within our own experience, and the awkwardness of that, and the way that sits within the body, within the mind, etc. And how that, although I'm not quite happy with that split, but anyway, and how you can bring that, how you can then recognize where it comes alive in performance for other people. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So where we kind of stopped, we got to a point where everyone was very, very into this.
Yeah.
And then suddenly the course was over. Mm-hmm. So everyone was sort of like running off a cliff, roadrunner-like, mm-hmm. and kind of going, oh. Going back to this thing about the therapeutic, I think it's... this is a conversation that we had with the students, that they found this method of discussion and learning and research, they found it satisfying a need that they were not getting satisfied through their more regular format of research, because they were immediately implicated in their own work. Mm. And therefore there was a level of involvement, of participation, not just getting up and running about the room and drawing with colours or whatever, but also a level of emotional participation. Mm. And we had several conversations throughout the sessions about how an emotional awareness or emotional level of engagement can aid your own work. It's sort of like Vicky Bertram's, a lot of the feminist writers that I've been reading at the minute, you know, sort of saying, well, what do we exclude? What makes something academic? How can we label this as therapeutic and this as academic when clearly the two are merging?
Sure, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Together to create, in the OSL space, to create a new, or perhaps not new, but to create a form of knowledge building.
Yeah.
Where the students are implicated, as I say, not just physically, but also emotionally in their work.
I mean, I absolutely agree, and I think that the key there is reflection. You know, the key is not that you're not just there to be consoled.
Yeah.
that you're challenging it. Absolutely. Which is, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's the distinction I'm really drawing, is that the therapeutic in my mind is, you know, there's a kind of consolation in it, you know.
Yeah.
You go along to be cured, rather than going along to reflect.
Yes.
You know, and that idea that, you know, I can just see the arch critic sitting there saying, well, this is only therapy, right?
Yeah.
Because there's no self-challenge here. This is a letting go of oneself and a kind of a demand for other people to cure them.
Yeah.
You know, in that sense of, that's what we talk when we talk about self-help. But in a derogatory sense, that's precisely what we mean, isn't it? That this sense of, well, you know, but where's the reflection?
Yeah.
You know, because reflection actually opens you up to something new, whereas therapy, in some contexts, just means to consolidate what you've got and kind of tell you it's okay.
Well, exactly. And also, this sense of cure means that we're going from this to that, whereas I see it, this kind of work, as about, I mean, I'm into this notion of becoming, and that it's constant, there's something, there is no end point.
Yeah.
Hopefully, in identity, there is no end point.
Yeah.
Because...
And I remember, I think it was Jeanette who brought this home to me, because she gave a performance piece which was very reflective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it flirted with the idea of confession and therapy, I think.
Yeah, very much.
And it was an interesting tension, but actually an interesting tension, rather than one that I thought, oh, that's therapeutic. That's not actually experimental.
Yeah.
But I thought it was experimental, for her especially. And I think that, you know, it was clear that it was.
It's very interesting, that, because... I would have liked to have, particularly with Jeanette's performance, I would have really liked to have been able to give her feedback and then see what she'd do with someone else's story.
Yeah.
Particularly with that performance.
Yeah.
Because it, as you say, it combined all of this. It was as massive. I mean, it was sort of like, you know, it was almost like a letter, you know, delivered. You know, it was very personal, but also, I like the way you put it, sort of flirting with this.
Maybe it was theatrical, at the same time as it was very personal.
And
I suppose that's, in a sense, that's the reflective achievement.
Yeah. And then the key is, okay, so you've invited us to your house now. How can you invite us into, let's say, Peter's house?
Yeah. That would have been the next stage of...
Absolutely, where then everything changes, because you've got a sort of now more of a sense of the aesthetics that you want to work with, and you're, where you sit within these questions and everything, then I think you can start to transpose. Mm. Because before that, as I say, verbatim theatre, in my experience of it, it just becomes... It's in danger of becoming flat. It's in danger of becoming a rant.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and somehow it gets divorced from the life, the actual life that it is trying to represent, the actual otherness, the experience of that it is trying to shed light on. I think I mean, performatively, I've lost a lot of interest in the form, and I was hoping that through this it might actually begin to find ways of bringing it back to life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
And have you looked at, you know, the ethnodrama that... Is it Claudette?
I heard about it, yeah. Something to do with death and dying.
Yeah, I think she's doing,
Yeah.
It's in June, I think. But yes, yeah, so she's going to actually put on a performance, you know, would you have liked to have had that opportunity to put on a group performance to get them to do something?
Absolutely. I would have liked them to work, at some point I would like them to work in groups of three or four. I mean, it could be a few more, but I'd say you don't need more than three or four. And to create their own piece.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing prescribed. I'd almost like to sort of look in, sort of be on hand if required, type thing.
Yeah.
I was surprised that the only person who did that was actually Peter.
Yeah.
I was very surprised about that. But I think it was also a bit of a whirlwind.
Sure.
Everyone was knocked a bit for six.
I think I have one more question, just to bring it back to the academic side, or the institution, the university side. These are all self-selecting students.
Mm.
And I wonder, you'd get a different mix of resistance and play with a group who weren't self-selecting. So let's say you were going into a departmental module, and this was a component of it.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that? I mean, you know, the difference. I mean, do you think this could work? Where the students were more resistant. to the premise of it.
You mean it's like something like a required course? If it were
yeah, it's a course. It's a course that a department decides to invest in and run. Mm-hmm. And say, you know, we want our students to have this experience. We think it's valuable. But the students are, of course, used to traditional learning methods. So you know.
Yeah. I think you'd... I think the way that I would address that would be to start a lot more gently than I did.
Yeah.
I had, as I said, I had originally planned to start very gently, no moving around, everyone just sitting in a circle, mm-hmm. in circle of chairs, looking at, equal ops forms and, you know, all the rest of it. Of course, that didn't happen because, as you say, they were largely self-selecting and obviously they had something they wanted to bring, sure. or discuss or explore. I'd go a lot more gently. I'd say even the first two sessions, and then from there see how they were going, would be a lot more formal, just studying the form.
Yeah.
What is verbatim theatre?
Sure.
Blah, 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 blah. And then start to introduce some of the stuff we were playing with in this particular course. Mm-hmm. Start to introduce that more and more slowly. Which therefore would require more time.
Sure.
The other thing I would love to see is students getting the opportunity. If it were, let's say it were a year-long course, uh-huh. in the first term, start a bit more slowly, then start to lift it off to this kind of point that we were at. I would love to offer students the opportunity to go and volunteer for, let's say, a week, 2 weeks, or some prescribed amount of time, at an organisation. So, for example, as I say, when I did the prostitute show, I went and volunteered at the ECP. You know, there are no doubt loads of institutions that they could volunteer at, so that they're actually empowered. You know, they're actually out there doing this, seeing what it is to be in working in these institutions in the quote-unquote real world, whatever that is. And then to be able to come back, and having done that, when they got into groups, doing all the self-reflexive stuff first, then going out and doing that, then coming back in groups, I think you'd see something very different.
Yeah.
Very. Because it would get grounded, to use that theatre term.
Yeah. You know. That's good.
Yeah.
Excellent. No, that's great.
Don't you think it was there? A lot of people said this. Not students, but people I was speaking to.